broadcasting from the Unshackled Studios in Melbourne. This is Wilmsfront, brought to you by theunshackled.net. Now here's Tim Wilms.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the midweek edition of Wilmsfront. The date is Wednesday, 15th of July, 2020. We are live on the Wilmsfront YouTube and DLive channel. We are also broadcasting through the YouTube and DLive Enhanced software Entropy, which I've just put in the live chats of both platforms. That's where you can interact with the show, send through a question to either myself or my guest tonight, or you can send through a super chat or a poll if we think of one. Oh, as you know, well, it's just after 7 p.m. here in lockdown Melbourne. We're approaching 1 week at level 3 coronavirus lockdown restrictions in Greater Melbourne and Mitchell Shire. They are scheduled to remain in place until 11:59 p.m. on August 19th, though the daily new coronavirus cases in Victoria have been over 200 for 4 of the 5 past days, with the mainstream and social media campaigning for Victoria to introduce stage 4 restrictions, even though there is no official source or anything about what stage 4 restrictions would look like. There is also new pressure on Melburnians to wear masks when outside the home for one of the 4 essential reasons, though the official medical advice has not changed at all throughout all this pandemic. It's the advice has been only to recommend wearing a mask if you feel you cannot maintain social distancing. Now, the coronavirus clusters that emerged in Melbourne have found their way north of the now closed New South Wales border. There's been a few clusters now in southwestern Sydney, including a pub, which has fueled public fear up there about lockdowns being reintroduced. Again, mainstream and social media going into fear overdrive. Now, as you all know, I'm a Melburnian, but so for contrast, I've got a Sydney-sider on tonight's edition of Wilmsfront. Not just back due to popular demand, but also because, in my view, he's an even greater cataloguer of current events than myself. Joel Jamal in Sydney, welcome back to Wilmsfront.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me again.
Now, I'll go through what the actual rules and your rights are under Victoria's Stage 3 lockdown, but you're the Sydney-sider, or New South Welshman as well. You're still allowed to say New South Welshman, or is it New South Welsh person now?
I think you could say Welshman. It hasn't quite gotten as bad as Victoria, Tim.
And this is where it's really confusing with Daniel Andrews from the get-go has gone with level 1, level 2, level 3 restrictions. He's only talking about level 4 now because he's being asked about it by the press pack. So they're basically egging him on. It's another layer of what I call the politico media complex, which doesn't just include the mainstream media but also social media these days. So they're fueling it here, and there's a similar lockdown push in for, well, at least Sydney at the moment. What are your current restrictions? What are you in the stages out of it to a COVID safe Australia, which is the stages out rather than the stages in?
Well, look, it's definitely not as bad as Victoria, obviously. In terms of the specifics of the actual lockdown restrictions, I'm not 100% sure on what it is, but there are a few changes which have been made, including the amount of people allowed at some establishments like bars. But other than that, there are some new restrictions coming in, especially interstate related. Northern Territory, for example, today is shutting the border to Sydney siders specifically. I do believe very soon, but they will be opening up their borders on schedule on Friday in the Northern Territory. and Queensland their own story.
And South Australia, it's not just Sydney siders who are going to still be banned along with the Victorians. It's the whole of New South Wales, so Northern Territory and Queensland, just singling out Sydney cider postcodes. But South Australia, they're taking the Western Australia path there with banning the whole state.
Yeah, no, look, there's a lot of changes happening very rapidly. I have to admit, it's very hard to keep track of it because often they change them within a few hours. I mean, just as an example, the daily counts for the coronavirus cases per day in Victoria, the Australian newspaper, which was recently dubbed the most trustworthy newspaper by ABC employees, is often getting numbers wrong even when Daniel Andrews is just about to get off and he gives a press conference and he gives a different number. So look, there's a lot of this stuff that's in the air, but try to find the sources that can keep you as informed, as updated, as quickly as possible.
Because that's what really has angered me the past week, just the deliberate misinformation and at times fake news and also campaigning for the lockdown, and especially we're going to get to masks later on. This is why I said in my introduction, there's been no change in medical advice about masks. But when it was the advice was given about masks by Victoria's chief health officer, Dr. Brett Sutton, I was getting news alerts saying Victorians told to wear masks. No, that's fake news. That's not what he said.
Yeah, now look, the mask situation is different around the world, to be completely honest. It seems like most of the world is coming around to see that masks are the way they want to go with public policy. But in terms of what the initial message was, I have to admit it was very confusing from the start what was going on until we sort of heard some credible voices speak out on this and they started to coalesce around the correct way of handling this.
Well, I would say that's... as I said, there hasn't been a change in advice. I've always told people to go directly to the source for the information on the coronavirus, the wearing of masks, the statistics, and also what are the rules. And this is going to be the crux of the show tonight. We're going to go through what is the actual official advice on masks, where are we at currently with the coronavirus cases in Victoria and nationwide, what are exactly the rules, because most people, they're just going about their day-to-day lives. They don't have time to go on to the Department of Health and Human Services website to actually look at it. They hear a media report and say, oh shit, and this fuels things such as panic buying, which happened again in Melbourne last week in the lead up to the lockdown on 11:59 p.m. last Wednesday night. But then the next day when people realized, oh, the supermarkets aren't shut, the panic buying stopped.
Yeah, look, there is a lot of misinformation out there, Tim, and I think that it's not helpful. But a lot of it, I wouldn't leave... It's very easy to fall into the trap of thinking it's all misinformation. A lot of it is just government being crap at their jobs, which I've always said.
Oh, yes. And we're going to get to that, too.
And also exactly. And also the media, which is the reason why people even watch what you do, because the media do such a terrible job fear-mongering, and people know that, you know, people don't trust the media.
All right, let's go to the nationwide coronavirus graphic from the Department of Health. Now, to give this graph, was last updated on the 14th of July, 2020. They updated at 3 p.m. every day with the available data there. So as you can see, the nationwide curve there peaked in March when the international borders were shut, became as flat as a tack, and then we can see, well, that's mainly Victoria there. Victoria is now way out in front as the number one COVID state. And if you look at Victoria here, I'm not sure if you can see it, if I can zoom in any further here. locally acquired is the orange, and you can see in Victoria the orange bar there. Locally acquired contact of a confirmed case, and also the green, that is locally acquired contact not identified, and the blue is the overseas acquired. So as you can see there, New South Wales was the worst in terms of the blue. The overseas acquired in Victoria is the worst in the orange and the green in terms of community transition there. What are the actual concerning figures there is 90 now admitted to hospital, 85 of those in Victoria, 27 in ICU, 26 in Victoria. That's still the hospital system is not overwhelmed, but this is based on what Daniel Andrews and Brett Sutton have said. They are expecting more hospitalizations in the next week. A nationwide positive rate of 0.3%. Victoria is now ahead with the most tests nationwide, but its positive rate has gone up to 0.4% there. So in my opinion, there's definitely cause for concern, but definitely not the alarm that we are seeing.
Absolutely. And I mean, something that just came out today, Tim, I don't want to jump the gun, but was the fact that a lot of these cases that were community transmission, a lot of them did come from the marches. A lot of people are overlooking that. Just today, the news came out that there was a cluster.
Yeah, I'll bring that up now. This is from the Herald Sun. It was unlocked.
Yep. So look, we knew for some time that there were two cases from the marches, but we weren't sure how many people that actually infected. Well, it turns out at this stage we have a numbers of 242 cases from that Black Lives Matter march. Now, how many people are going to lose their jobs because of that?
Who lost their... There's still one public housing tower under a hard lockdown. Eight have been released, but there's still one until at least this Saturday, 11:59 p.m.
Exactly, because I did fail to mention that those 242 people are mainly from those towers. Mm. Now, what do we do in that situation? Are there going to be any heads roll from government because of that? Mm. They greenlit the marches. In fact, some of them were down there. In fact, I think there was a Green senator in New South Wales who was actually at the march. And when asked on, I think, Sky News or one of the news channels, when asked, are you going to get tested for the good of your fellow parliamentarians? She said, no, I don't think so.
I think this was Janet Rice, the Victorian Green senator, because she claims that she socially distanced, wore PPE. Yeah. I can't remember, but she was eventually pressured by... Who's the new leader again? Adam Bandt. I think she did take the test due to pressure there. But this is one of the reasons the organizers they claimed it was safe because they encouraged everyone to wear PPE and socially distance and use hand sanitizer. But if you saw, well, we'll just bring it up here. The photo from that day doesn't look like there's much social distancing there.
It's insane, Tim. I mean, we saw 60,000 people marching around Australia. 60,000 no social distancing, not everyone wearing masks, and these are the rules that they set down. I didn't set these rules. And you and I disagree on masks. Mm. And there's not going to be one person in leadership that's head's going to roll because of this. And because of that, we've got to look at, you know, how many people have died so far in Victoria because of this. You can draw a direct link to those decisions.
Well, we were standing at 22 before the second wave. We're up to 27 lives lost now. So net increase in the second wave of 5.
Exactly.
And we've got 108 nationwide now.
Exactly. And there'll be more to come. There's a 2-week lag on deaths. And we've seen, how many new cases have we seen over the course of the last week or two, Tim? There's been thousands.
Yeah. Well, look at the active case number here, almost just shy of 2,000 now, which it's just risen so rapidly, those active cases, which are the important ones.
Exactly. And, you know, it'll get worse, Tim, because when a lot of these infected people get locked down or have to go to the hospital or when they go home, guess what? The virus, the worst place for someone to be is in a confined space, especially if they have it and they don't know it and they're with their family. A lot of people in the US were finding in a lot of the towers in New York got the coronavirus as well. And I'd like to know what they're doing extra to protect the elderly and the elderly homes in Victoria. What are they going to do for those? Are they going to defend them like a fortress, as they should? I don't think so.
Well, although there have been plenty of bungles in Victoria with the coronavirus response, they have not made the absolutely catastrophic decisions that they made in New York and Pennsylvania, which was to send coronavirus patients into nursing homes. That was just abhorrent. That was
exactly.
Horrible.
And for those that didn't know, that led to 70% of the deaths in New York being from the nursing homes. By the way, that's 35,000 deaths happened in New York State. 70% of those were in the nursing homes. Imagine how many grandparents that was, how many families that affected. And by the way, as an aggregate in the US, 45% of all the deaths that happened in the US so far have been from nursing homes. So defend those things like it's a fortress. You need to make it into a fortress from all of this. If you defend one thing, it's probably that. You know, the younger people younger than 60, younger than 50, they can go about their day. If they get it, they'll be fine if they don't have any underlying conditions. There's, in fact, under the age of 20, I do believe that there's a higher chance of dying from the normal flu than there is from this virus.
The thing about, because nursing homes are also confined spaces, and the it's been seen as a silver bullet. You just lock the nursing home down and it saves everyone there. But as we've seen with Victoria's hotel quarantine, if it's not done properly, the same with nursing home lockdowns, like if the staff get infected and give it back to their families, or some of the staff get it from somewhere else and bring it into the nursing home. Like if you're going to actually take that step to protect the people in there, you've got to make sure that you're not the people enshrined with the protection are not going to make it worse. And that's what concerned me about the initial public housing tower lockdowns, because apparently they had to have all these police and health professionals to monitor it, and you're adding more people to the confined space. How are you going to make sure that they're not going to get it and take it back and spread it more? These are the other things as well. Lockdown, it has to be done right. Otherwise, it's pointless.
Exactly. And when I say lock down the nursing homes, I'm not saying lock them down like the way we're locking states. I'm saying give them the extra attention that they need. If we need extra staff out there, then get extra staff out there so that we're rotating the caretakers there a lot more regularly. Make sure that you're more stringent with the level of how often things get clean. Make sure you're more stringent with the amount, with the visitors that can come at all. You know, these are the sort of things I'm talking about. I'm not talking about like what they did, the lockdown of towers. That was just, not only was it inhumane and it just targeted the poor people in the area there, but it's not effective at all. I mean, the whole tower is going to get infected. God forbid if the aircon system there is anything like the cruise ship aircon systems, which is infamously bad. I mean, I was on one of the last cruise ships to safely go on as an Australian, and this was just around about the time that Norwegian ship got infected. I was the ship before that. I was on the Emerald. I was on the Explorer of the Seas or another ship. And that ship, the ship we got off on, we were fine. The ships after that, they got totally infected. That was the Ruby Princess. That was all of them in February. And the air cons in these ships, even myself, there was a day I got sick. I didn't know what it was, but it turned out just to be, you know, just a cough. But the problem with a lot of air con systems, you've got to be careful. And confined spaces is not the way to go. You need to get people out to get some vitamin D. They need fresh air. Especially with kids who, you know, they get very restless inside. And on top of that, we haven't even talked about the domestic violence rates that have gone through the roof because of this these lockdowns that have happened in the past.
You're exactly right. There's still not enough attention on the mental health, and I would also say physical health impacts of, well, now another lockdown here in Melbourne. There's a lot of Melburnians in the live chat at the moment, and we all felt like crap last week when we were told we were going to be going back into 6 weeks of lockdown. You just want to not want to get up from bed in the morning, because what's the point? There's not much to look forward to in the day. And I'd say another virus is feel crap 20. You know, you're not sick with coronavirus, but you're just feeling really lousy, tired, just because you're so demoralized.
Look, I'm laughing and I'm smiling, because if I didn't, I'd be crying for you guys, because there's a bunch of people down there that I really do feel, I feel for the whole state, and there's a bunch of greenies down there and lefties down there. I honestly care about everyone down there, because I mean, we've heard Dr. Phil, the famous Dr. Phil, talk on this issue. It's detrimental to on a number of different levels. And what's worse is not only the fact that you guys have already locked down, but what's worse is that I've been listening very closely to the words that Dan Andrews has been using in every day that he does a press conference. There is no guarantee that it'll be over at 6 weeks. I don't even know why he said 6 weeks.
Yeah, and no guarantee there'll be more restrictions as well. And I do also make the point that it's the media asking him as well. A lot of what he says about this, they're questions asked by the media, basically egging him on.
It's insane. It's absolutely insane. You know, he's done, look, I'm not trying to throw shade at him, but he's done very well in almost losing his grasp on the leadership there to having the most power any premier has had there in 100 years. The state's locked down its border with New South Wales the first time in 100 years. That's insane. Now, I'm not saying that was a bad move.
Well, it was a mutual decision.
It was a mutual decision. But the point is that the premiers around Australia have more power right now than they've ever had. Correct me if I'm wrong. And that's not a power that they're going to let go just that easily, especially if they've got other problems happening in the background. In fact, a lot of people, just to give you an example, a lot of people have been criticizing for the last year or so, the Israeli Prime Minister who had some corruption investigations being done into him. And even in his case, people were criticizing him because they were, at the same time, often they'd be getting bombed from outside. You know, there's a lot of things that happen during crises, and it's very opportunistic to focus on outward pressures and to retain any emergency powers you're given. We've got to be very careful. It's a very slippery slope.
Well, Israel is also going through a second wave as well. Back during the height of the pandemic, I had Israeli on my show. He runs the SJW Central YouTube channel. He's based in Tel Aviv and went through what their lockdown was like, the political implications, and Tel Aviv is basically like the Melbourne of Israel. It is SJW Central. So I should message him again to see how Tel Aviv's going at the moment. Though it was interesting that in Israel's lockdown, one of the reasons for leaving the house was to attend a protest. That was deemed still an essential reason, which it was not in Victoria until the it wasn't just the Black Lives Matter rallies. They were the ones that got the most publicity, but then there were Free the Refugees rallies, abolish Australian Border Force, they chanted, even though that's our borders that have helped keep us safe. And then there was an Extinction Rebellion rally. So there was a whole bunch of other rallies that happened in Melbourne during that period.
Yeah, and it's been very interesting to see what the implications of those will be.
Yes, and like you said, it's now been proved both by the contact tracing, which is proving to be a whole whole challenge in itself has traced those cases back to the public housing towers. And there was also another positive who worked at that H&M Williams store in Northland that had to be closed. A few other people were infected and as well.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of immigrant communities down in Victoria as well have been very big clusters there. I mean, there was the obviously some of the butchers down there and the meat factories. Very dangerous stuff.
We actually have got from the, I think I've got multiple tabs on at the moment. I think I've got this at the moment. Yes, I have. Just got to click onto it. The actual report on the clusters at the moment. If I just go to the right. Here we go, coronavirus 15 update here. And this is where you actually get additional information that's not in the mainstream media headlines. So it says, as of 15th of July, there's 238 new cases since yesterday's report, but it says the overall total has increased by 224, with 14 cases reclassified largely due to duplication. Of the cases, 29 of the new cases, this is the day, 29 are linked to outbreaks, 209 are under investigation. 790, this is active cases, community transmission, and this is in Victoria. I've already been through that, the people in hospital ICU. And it also gives of the total cases, 4,017 are from metropolitan Melbourne, 305 are from regional Victoria. And this is why this second lockdown is overall better targeted, and that it doesn't lock up regional Victoria as well, and in fact protecting them as well, but still some cases are seeping out there.
Yeah, no, I mean, like the other states are considering the whole of Victoria infected now. I mean, it's had enough time to get to every corner of that state by far. I know someone who came up from Victoria not so long ago, before the lockdowns came in, and they got out of there just in the nick of time, within 3 days of the lockdowns coming in and them enforcing a border. And so, look, they came all the way from the west part, almost near the South Australian border. So I honestly, this thing travels, it's very infectious. And it's very infectious because not only because it's a respiratory disease, but in terms of the way we've been living, we are a lot more dense in population. You know, these things, they will travel very quickly. We're just lucky that, you know, there aren't so many animals that it's been jumping from. That could be a real problem.
Well, if there's any reassessment when we eventually finally get out of this pandemic to, I'll just call it normality, I'm not going to use the term old or new normal, we should utilize the space that we have in Australia. We're a large nation. We have the ability to spread out. There's been a lot of criticisms in recent years of big houses, what are termed McMansions, and also urban sprawl. I think you'd be much healthier during a time like this if you're confined to a McMansion, and if you were on a larger outer urban block than an inner city apartment. And it might actually reverse the exodus from regional Victoria. It's like, if you don't want to get really sick, you want a larger block to spread around, go to regional Victoria and settle down.
Yeah, I mean, central planning does have its issues. I mean, there are a lot of benefits, obviously, business and tertiary work, but in terms of the some of the problems that come with it, they are numerous. I mean, crime is certainly one. We all know crime.
Well, we've also had here the work from home revolution, the work from home directions. If you can work from home, you must. They have not changed in Victoria at all since the pandemic, and that's shown it can be done in that sense if you've got an office job which is on the computer.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're seeing the changing task force. like that, then the nature of office work will change, likely due to that as well, because a lot of, you know, it's not worth, you know, the multi-billion dollar industry, which is a commercial office space and hiring that out to people over the course of every few years, that's going to be completely a different industry. I mean, I would recommend if I went into property management rather than property development, I'd be very worried right now.
And in the city center itself, it's you see the footage on the news, it's virtually empty. The rat races, as they're commonly referred to, they're not there. And which I suppose during a lockdown, that's what you want. But you wonder, and I'll use the term again, new normal, whether that sort of rat race crowd, those packed trains and people walking up Swanson Street and Bourke Street, whether they'll eventually return.
Yeah, it's pretty filthy, we'll see.
Yeah. Now let's have a look at the coronavirus active cases by local government area or council area. It's abbreviated LGA for short. And before this full second Greater Melbourne and Mitchell Shire lockdown, it was 10 postcodes in the northwest that were locked down. Then it was expanded to 12, and those public housing towers were under the ultimate house arrest. This is what it looks like at the moment. So you can see it's still in the northwest. The city of Hume, that was the first to reach over 100 active cases, 185, that's in bright red. Have the city of, city of Hume takes in Broadmeadows and Sunbury to give a bit more of a suburb name to these municipalities. City of Wyndham, which is Werribee and Tarneit, 175 active cases. Brimbank, which is Sunshine, that's 107 active cases. Moonee Valley, which is Essendon, that's 161 active cases. City of Moreland, it doesn't come up there. I think it jumps around here. City of Melbourne is getting really bad, 158 active cases there. But down near where I live... if I go down here, City of Frankston, if you'll let me... Oh, this is the City of Kingston, which is 6. To give you an idea of City of Kingston, that's where Patterson Lakes is, which is the Kath and Kim territory. City of Bayside, which is Brighton and Sandringham, that's 3. And you have the... Yeah, typical government map. It's not very good in this regard. So, city of Greater Dandenong, that's where that infamous KFC run of 20 meals for that birthday party was. Obviously, it hasn't caused a cluster there because there's only one active case. City of Frankston, one active case. Mornington Peninsula, one active case. City of Casey, which is still an area for concern in the southeast, that's been hovering around... Well, it's up to 23 now active cases. That's the first time it's been in the 20s. Neighbouring city of Cardinia, 6. There was another KFC fine that was handed out. A man who was eating at a KFC when you're not allowed to dine in. And when he was told to get out, he refused. And so obviously he was fine. I wonder if KFC people maybe can alert me if they're going to put out a statement saying, please make sure you don't get a corona fine with your meal. Follow the directions.
I don't know what it is about people who get KFC. They just never get between a man and his chicken, I guess.
And I noticed a lot of mashups of literally mashups, no pun intended, of I'm not sure, most people know those KFC ads when there's an awkward moment and then someone says, did someone say KFC? Obviously, when the police busted those 20 people at that party, when they said, did someone say KFC, obviously didn't lead to the desired outcome.
Yeah, it didn't work out as it wasn't as picture perfect as they hoped.
Yeah.
But you know, it was very interesting detective work, the way they figured that out. That was really interesting.
Well, it was actually a chance, because it was Ambos who were getting some KFC at 1:30 in the morning, and they thought it was suspicious that people were purchasing 20 KFC meals at that time of night, and they got down the number plate and reported it to the police. So it was by chance for them. But Victoria Police have said birthday parties and other types of parties, that's been the main source of fines, 1,652 penalty infringement notices during this time. They've actually busted a lot in Melbourne apartment towers, which, well, if you look at the active cases, you can sort of see why they would target those. This is, and I think this is the important thing, that for Victoria Police to maintain public confidence, they should obviously have the most enforcement in those hotspots. Sure, the rest of Melbourne is in lockdown, but you obviously the police don't have infinite resources. You need to target it where the risk is most and where people need to follow the stay-at-home orders to a T, and only limit their outings as much as possible. For example, there have been drones flying above Brunswick and Burwood, those sort of places. But where I am in Frankston, I haven't heard drones outside, which shows that there's some sense to that. I know that a lot of people don't like being surveilled by drones, but this is what is needed to actually make enforcement effective and targeted and respected.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. If that's what they want to do, I mean, what's going to happen with Victoria? If they don't lock down, then they're going to have a massive spike. And if they do lock down, they're going to see the loss of a massive amount of businesses. So they're policing however they can to avoid that massive spike. They'd rather the lockdown.
And yeah, those checkpoints, the Ring of Steel in Melbourne there, it's basically to keep regional Victoria safe, so they can still go to the pub there in wherever it is, Traralgon or Bendigo or Ballarat or Warrnambool or Wodonga. And I wish we'd had more targeted, less draconian lockdown the first time around, because clearly the first draconian lockdown didn't work. Victoria issued the most fines, banned the most things, and yet look where it is now.
Exactly. It just shows that the bigger the government gets, it's just like pouring fuel on a fire. Doesn't work. It doesn't matter if you pour more on it, it still won't work.
And as we've seen with the hotel quarantine, which there is going to be a judicial inquiry run by the state of Victoria that commences on July 20 and will last for 3 months. So it starts, it's the 15th today, so it starts next Monday, so it is starting soon. Which we'd rather sooner, later, and later, because a lot of people are getting quite visibly frustrated and angry with Dan Andrews stonewalling about the hotel quarantine questions, who got the security contract, and why. He's just said this is for the independent judicial inquiry. And there has been a lot that has been reported about the bungles and also the bonking in the Melbourne hotel quarantine, which just beggars belief. But obviously, and I've spoken previously about how the mainstream media, they're reporting a lot of misinformation and downright fake news. We shouldn't, obviously all these really crazy stuff that was allegedly going on, it's you know, we do need to find out whether that's actually true. I mean, I hope it's not true, like, otherwise, because when we read it, it was just like, are you serious? So it is important that we get to the bottom, like, what stuff that was reported in the media is true and what was, a bit more salacious.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, wait till the facts come out. But once the facts come out, heads are going to have to roll.
And we want it to be an open inquiry. I mean, Dan Andrews has promised that it'll have the power to call ministers, even himself. We hope that it can subpoena public servants, have documents as well. If Andrews is genuine about this, then it's got to be open book because there's still, if it is restricted in any way, then you're just going to get more of these leaks through the media about, there are a few emails that got leaked about concerns raised as early as March about how the quarantine was managed. If you basically want to stem the bleeding, you need to have an autopsy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the media's, I noticed when it sort of clicked with the media, I think it was around about that time that Dan Andrews had that massive scandal with the branch stacking in Victoria. And I think at that point, that was the click and the media just really turned against him and so did the Greens and on every issue pretty much since then. So it's been fascinating to watch how quickly they can change.
Okay, I had the wrong document out before. I've got so many tabs out. This gives us a detail from Victorian DHHS of the cases currently linked to known outbreaks. So 150 cases have been linked to that Al-Taqwa College, that Muslim college in the north of Melbourne. 33 cases have been linked to Somerville Retail Services in Tottenham. A lot of people were alarmed when they heard the word Somerville because that's a suburb near where I live here in Frankston. That's not the suburb Somerville, that's the name of the company, and it's based in Tottenham, which is in Melbourne's west. 29 cases linked to Menrock Life Aged Care in Essendon, 21 cases linked to JPS Abattoir in Brooklyn, 12 cases linked to La Mana Supermarket Essendon. Do you know what type of the origin of that word, Joel?
No, I don't.
Okay. I was hoping if it was the sort of an Arabic ethnic one, you'd know.
It doesn't ring a bell. Maybe you botched the pronunciation.
La Mana.
No, I'm not sure. I've never heard of it.
Nine cases too in Brasia, Moonee Valley Aged Care. 5 cases to Steel Mains in Somerton, 4 cases Waste Management and Hyab Services are Deer, that's near, as the name suggests, Deer Park, 4 cases linked to DT Cabinets, Dandenong South, 3 cases linked to a repair shop in Preston, 2 cases linked to an aged care home in Faulkner. And this is because Victoria Police, the Chief Commissioner, Shane Patton, he went pretty hard at the end of last week with, you know, the threats of fines and enforcements last week. But the reason why I talk about targeted enforcement, because there's also the contact tracing as well. How can you enforce lockdowns, quarantines, self-isolation if you can't contact trace? And that's been the other thing, and they've had to bring in basically the call centers of the major corporations to manage that.
Yeah, it's been very interesting to see how they've gotten big business to get around that. It's actually been quite a good idea. Yeah. I think in the case of some of the towers, I'm reminded of how they got some of the flight attendants to help with that, which is a good use of labor that's been recently made, been put off work, but obviously need to be trained so that they handle it well and we don't have an outbreak anymore.
And we should also remind people that hotel quarantine has ended in Melbourne now due to the outbreaks. So there's no international flights arriving in Melbourne now. They're being diverted. And in fact, there was a cap announced last week on international arrivals. I think 4,500, the daily limit. And the media reported a few hardship stories that this would mean some Australians are stuck overseas. But my response was, well, you've had 3 or 4 months' notice to get back as soon as you can. I'd rather you be inconvenienced, even though it sucks for you, rather than us all having to go back into lockdown.
Yeah, I mean, one of the you've seen my posts about the 14 rules I've put out, and I think one of the
we republished it on the Unshackled.
That's right. So look, rule number two was repatriate everyone overseas that's an Australian citizen immediately. And I know that this did happen in some countries like Spain, where my cousin was. But in a lot of countries, people took their time, and you know, they wanted to took months off, and they're just coming back now. And it's just ridiculous thinking like, come on, guys, you know, just get back here. Otherwise, what do you think is going to happen? And look, when they get shocked at the fact that, oh, the government's not footing the bill anymore. I mean, what did you think was going to happen? We can't pay $3,000 for every, you know, person every time. It's not going to happen.
There was also a lot of attention given to the fact that Dani Minogue, she'd returned from Los Angeles to the Gold Coast, but she didn't have to go into hotel quarantine. She'd been given an exemption because she had a COVID safe plan. And it was spun by the chief health officer there that this works out cheaper for the taxpayer because Dani Minogue can afford to have her own team to manage her hotel quarantine. And provided that it, like, that there are some sort of checkups on Dani Minogue to make sure that she's doing what she said she would, it doesn't look like it's the special treatment that some people thought it was.
Yeah, I think everyone would have had that knee-jerk reaction that it was special treatment, but I definitely, well, once I read the second paragraph, I was like, oh, okay, now it looks like they've got some systems in line. It's not special treatment. So now look, that seems like it's all fine. I mean, if all the prominent people did that, I think in New Zealand, as in a different example, there was a film crew that was allowed in, and they had their own, I think they had their own COVID safe sort of plans for there. And look, that's perfectly fine as long as they stick to it.
And you only have to look at, in terms of putting up hard borders, barriers, 2020 is the year that shows just how beneficial strong borders are. WA has had the hard border closure. They're not coming out of it anytime soon. There have been some complaints from business and FIFO workers, but Mark McGowan, the premier who implemented it, it's worked for his state. Zero active cases in the community, no community transmission. They're at, was it stage four of their move to a COVID safe Australia, which is, well, it's an extra step of the three-step framework, and they're also thinking about going to stage five now, which basically would get rid of all social distancing restrictions. And they're hoping it's, I think it's this Sunday, the Western Derby between West Coast and Fremantle, and the AFL will be packed at Optus Stadium. And even though Western Australians, they're technically trapped in their state, they're able to move around it freely now. There's no restrictions. They can come and go to wherever they want as they please. And I would certainly prefer that. If I was free to move around anywhere in Victoria for any reason, but I wasn't allowed to go into state, I would value more that freedom to move around my own home city and state than open up all the borders.
Yeah, look, and that's great. That's a success story if they pull that off and they don't have another spike. I do think it's inevitable that there's another spike, but if you know, there's no leaks into the into there from whatever would influence that, like a truck driver coming in or whatever, that if everyone does the right thing, that yeah, I think that's successfully done. But the problem is what happens with lockdowns is if it's not done properly the first time and you don't kill it the first time, then it's very unlikely you're going to kill it again. I mean, the US will not kill the virus by lockdowns. It's too late. They're far beyond the point of doing that. You know, Australia, you know, we may have even been able to stop the first lockdown if perhaps we were a lot stricter with the border initially. But yes, even then, we still probably had cases here already.
But we were pretty good with our international border lockdown. We had one of the strictest in the world. The mandatory.
They're not perfect. Yeah. Mm.
Not perfect, but we did better than most. The UK had no mandatory quarantine, neither did the USA.
The UK was absolutely trash at the way they managed it. I followed that very closely when it first happened. They weren't even checking people at the airport, even well into the actual pandemic. I remember listening to some of the last shows of Nigel Farage before he got taken off air. And I remember him saying, I can't remember when, but even late into the pandemic, they still weren't checking people at the airport. There were people coming from Italy on aeroplanes. There were a number of flights a day coming in, and still it just wasn't happening. And this was when Italy was really copying it. And that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. And the US was also good with their border as well. I mean, Trump was very intuitive. People like Joe Biden opposed it and then later reversed and said, oh, no, that was actually a good idea, which was funny to watch. But look, that's the reality of difficult choices. You can't – a lot of pandemic prevention, we won't know which things have worked and which things haven't worked until at least a year from now. You've got to assess these things over longer periods of time, not short periods of time like polls, like we do with elections. It doesn't work that way.
Okay, so we'll go to the Greater Melbourne and Mitchell Shire lockdown rules, and also what you have the right to do and what you don't have the right to do, and then we'll go on to masks. And I want to start with this story, which was broken by Seven News on Friday. This woman here. So 2 days after the restrictions returned, Karen Evans says she was pulled over by police for having just delivered feed to her 16-year-old horse, Lily. I said, I've got no one to feed my horse for me, the Ferntree Gully woman told Seven News. So he just said, well, you do understand I have to find you. I said, this is ridiculous. You can't find me for caregiving just because she's not a human being. The officer issued Evans the $1,652 penalty infringement notice for driving the 13 kilometers from a home to feed Lily. When this broke on Friday night, it was just after Shane Patton had given Victorians a spray. And so there was a lot of anger in the aftermath of that when people saw this absurd story here. But it turns out, according to a Victoria Police spokesperson, told Seven News that following an extensive search on the system, they are unable to find any record of a fine being issued. We have since spoken to the woman who has confirmed she has not received a fine, but was told she would receive one in the mail. Based on the circumstances, Victoria Police does not intend to proceed with the matter. And notice how she changed her story after Victoria Police issued that statement, which could mean that perhaps she made it all up, which, if that is the case, causing hysteria in the community and animosity towards the police during that time, that's horrible for that to happen.
Well, it's not new, Tim. I mean, it's 100% a fact that one of the best ways to reduce reports of police brutality is by equipping all police with body cams, because not only do the people know that they're being watched, but so do the police officers. So the interactions between people are generally done quite well. And you know, a lot of people who cry wolf about police brutality when nothing actually happens, they know that that's on there, so they're not going to give it a go just to get out of a fine, for example.
We had that during Victoria's first lockdown, that learner driver who was fined for going for a learner drive too far away from home. It was originally withdrawn. But when that was reported by 3AW, they showed the penalty infringement notice that the learner driver was issued. So you saw it. But Seven News, in this case, they just interviewed the woman. They didn't show that she'd received a notice or that. So there was also that on that part of Seven News. They just took her word for it. They didn't ask to see the infringement notice. But you know, then again, Seven News they weren't to know the other side of the story initially.
They're just trash at their jobs, Tim. And you know what? This is why people don't trust them, and this is why people don't want to wear masks, for example, which we might get into.
Yeah, I just want to. We're just approaching 8 p.m. now. We do have Melbourne time. We do have to end at 8:30 for the next show that's on. But I'll just go here. The aftermath of this was RSPCA Victoria. Obviously, they were getting a lot of concern calls after this story. They issued its own statement to clarify that residents living under Stage 3 lockdown must provide proper care to their animals, which includes those on adjustment properties and arranging veterinary care when required. RSPCA Victoria is reaffirming that travel to care for animals is allowed during Stage 3 lockdowns. And Victoria's own Department of Health and Human Services states that residents can leave their home to attend to animals that are not located at their place of residence. However, they must abide by the same rules, including practicing good hygiene, such as washing and sanitizing hands before and after handling animals and their equipment. So there you go. The Department of Health and Human Services website was clear, which is actually what we're going to go to now. So this is the restrictions for Metropolitan Melbourne and Mitchell Shire. So this is what it says: the four reasons to leave the home: shopping for food and other essential items, to provide caregiving, for compassionate reasons, or to seek medical treatment, for exercise, outdoor exercise only, with one other person or members of your household, work or study if you cannot work or study from home. Now I'm just going to go to this sport and exercise section here, because Victoria was highly criticized for its banning of golf and fishing last time. So I'll just go, the questions which an affirmative is given. So can I attend a boot camp or personal training? And it says you can train outside with members of your household or with one other person who is not a part of your household, in addition to a personal trainer. People must abide by 1.5 meters distance and must not share equipment. You will not be able to participate in group fitness activities, including boot camps. So you are allowed to have a outdoor personal training session. Swimming pool's closed. You are allowed to play golf this time. People playing together must keep 1.5 meter distance apart and maintain 100 meters from all other groups, e.g. two people be playing a single hole at a time. Obviously, on a golf course, if you play golf, then that's relatively easy to do. Shared facilities and driving ranges cannot open. Equipment must not be shared. If you live in playgrounds and skate parks, they're closed. Outdoor communal gym equipment. You can go to the beach. You can go to the beach for exercise or recreation only. You can swim or surf at the beach, because there was a man in Elwood given a caution for paddle boarding, which was ridiculous. He was all out alone. You can go to the park for exercise and for well-being by yourself with one other person or your usual household members. For example, you can do yoga, you can read a book, or play a musical instrument in a park by yourself or with one other person. Remember during New South Wales, the initial lockdown, there were people who were bothered by the police in those parks reading a book because apparently they weren't exercising. Second time around, you are in Victoria, or in Greater Melbourne, you are allowed to read a book in a park.
That's ridiculous. Mm. That's ridiculous.
But you can see, second time around, things are a bit more reasonable.
Yeah, I think it's just crazy that they're policing. Like, how do you police that?
This is why we're doing this, know the rules and know your rights.
Yeah, look, it's good that they're learnt from the first round. I have to admit there are some rules still where I'm just like, how is that practical? But anyway,
can I go to a dog park? Yes, you can, with members of your household or one other person. Keep away from other people, pertaining 1.5 meters. Can I undertake recreational activities like fishing? This time, exercise and recreational activities are outdoors and can be done by yourself or members of your household with one other person. This includes fishing, boating, surfing, recreational diving, in case you want to go for a snorkel or something, learning to drive. There we go there. We were just talking about that, and reading in a park. However, you cannot drive a long way from home to do these activities when it can be done closer to home. You cannot leave metropolitan Melbourne, Mitchell, or Shire for sporting and recreational activity. You can go horse riding.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So you can go horse riding with one other person plus an instructor if required. Can I play professional sports? If you live in Melbourne or Mitchellshire, you can continue to play professional sports. Currently, professional sports have access to otherwise restricted facilities for the purpose of training, engaging in professional and sporting events. That's a bit too complicated, but it basically interpret that there's a more reasonable... It's basically, and I'll bring it back here, as long as, like, they're saying this time that as long as you're maintaining that social distancing, then yes, it's permitted, and there's not shared equipment, contact sports. Even lawn bowls is actually permitted, but it's limited to, you know, you can only play with one other person and obviously have to social distance.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I haven't read across any of the actual nitty-gritty of the rules, look, it seems like they've got their handle on it. Some of the things you just don't even think about. It's amazing. It's amazing how much bureaucracy there is to get all of this out that quickly.
I'll reiterate again, the reason why we went through that is to cut down on the hysteria that the unsure people, if they go to, you know, if they're going out to exercise or that, what am I not or allowed to do? And if you are doing those lawful activities and you are approached by a police officer, you can say that this is permitted according to the Department of Health and Human Services website. So you can assert that, yes, I'm allowed to do that under level 3 restrictions.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just glad we aren't there yet. this outbreak in New South Wales that we might see in the near future, like we're seeing in the hotel in the bar in Casula, is going to be interesting to watch and see how it spreads. I think it's probably too late. That's going to spread to the whole state most likely, because it doesn't look like they're going to lock down, which is good. I mean, I think it's good, and I think it's too late to lock down if they want to do what Western Australia's got. But you know what? That it's promising to hear from both Gladys and her executive of New South Wales, but also the Prime Minister last night, that they're going to prioritise economic growth because they recognise that the cure is worse than the disease in this case. Lockdowns, they will be worse than the virus and trying to treat it with lockdowns and the economic impacts that could flow and affect it. And it's almost as if someone's read out my 14 rules to them.
Did you send them to them?
I sent it to a few people. Whether it made it way up the chain that much, I don't think so. But then again, I don't think that I'm uniquely that smart. So I think they do know what they need to do. And I think there are people that are far more influential in business that have told them, if you do this, there's going to be repercussions and there's going to be pain. And look, I work in property development. The amount of projects I've seen held up that are just waiting to get a bit of certainty on this. And this, you know, hearing this from the Prime Minister has really given them certainty to proceed with them. It's been very interesting to see. And I just think that it's a good move for the Prime Minister and the leadership to go down this route, even if it is sort of a herd immunity route.
And you contrast what Gladys Berejiklian and Scott Morrison are saying with what Daniel Andrews is saying. Daniel Andrews is like, oh, we may need to, get tougher. I don't know. It'll go for as long as it needs to go. And you contrast it with Gladys and ScoMo, and they're saying, we want to keep re-kickstarting our economy. And Scott Morrison, his most famous line, we can't keep turning the on-off switch all the time whenever there's a new outbreak. And
exactly, and that's the thing. And you know what it looks like in Victoria? It looks like a van full of people, like we saw this last couple of days, people who said they try to sneak over. They parked the car at the Victorian border, they tried to sneak over to the New South Wales side, and they got caught by some patrolling cops. And when they were asked, what did they say? They said, We were fleeing the socialist state, pretty much. We were looking for better opportunities in New South Wales because the COVID lockdown has completely gotten rid of all of our jobs. We were trying to get out. What does that tell you? It kind of reminds me of what's happening with California and people fleeing to places like Texas, and so much so that Texas is going to get flipped blue soon. To a Democrat state.
Although with
is that what's going to happen in New South Wales?
The border on the Murray River, it's more like Mexico at the moment. Victorians are the new Mexicans. That's what Richard Wollstonecraft from the report from Tiger Mountain did his report on. Because obviously Victorians, to get across the border, they literally have to swim across the Murray. And I won't say the term, but you know what I mean when I say that they're the New Mexicans.
Yes, well, it does seem that way, and similar things are happening in California, which has just gone terribly wrong, absolutely terribly wrong.
We definitely are California at this stage, Victoria, which they did the same thing with their Los Angeles, is still in lockdown, but turned a blind eye to the BLM rallies.
Yeah, and they were shutting down churches, saying you couldn't sing in churches, saying that, people shouldn't be allowed to. I mean, I'm pretty sure some churches got burnt down in a few states this last week as well. Then just crickets from the leadership. In fact, in Bill de Blasio, the trash mayor's case in New York, what did he do? He started painting, a Black Lives Matter mural in front of Trump Tower because it got a bit of red paint splashed on it. He repainted it with his staff. How insane is that? No mask, by the way. He wasn't wearing a mask.
Now, even today, we still have no information, indication about what level 4 lockdown, stage 4 lockdown would look like in Greater Melbourne. Daniel Andrews and Brett Sutton have just said it will be based upon the case numbers and the epidemiology, and they're sort of saying that they won't just create a whole bunch more restrictions for the hell of it. It'll be targeted, which I guess makes some comfort. And this is the point that I'm making, that for a lockdown to work, the lockdown measures have to be targeted, and you have to actually make sure that quarantine is actually working. But we'll go to a place which did have level 4 lockdown, which was New Zealand, which I know a lot of the cult of Ardern have said, oh, because you went to level four, that's why New Zealand is still COVID-free. No, that's because their hotel quarantine breaches have been contained. That's the difference between New Zealand and Victoria. So level four lockdown means that people are instructed to stay home in their bubble other than for essential personal movements. So that's basically regional lockdowns, so sort of having checkpoints. Safe recreational activity is allowed in the local area. Travel is severely limited. All gatherings cancelled. All public venues closed. Businesses closed except for essential services such as supermarkets, pharmacies, clinics, petrol stations, and lifelines. So that means KFC is shut. McDonald's is shut. JB Hi-Fi is shut. The Telstra shop is shut. Bunnings and Kmart is shut. Educational facilities closed. Rationing of supplies and requisition of facilities possible. So some good socialism and communism there, and respirations of healthcare services there. So that's what level four looked like in New Zealand. A bit of an update on New Zealand politics. The opposition National Party have got a new leader after Todd Muller, who'd only been in the job 53 days, resigned due to mental health reasons. Though his replacement, Judith Collins, she is certainly, in my opinion, the best person for the job at this time. I'll talk more about it with Dewey Deborah Trad Tasman talk, but she's got the nickname Crusher Collins due to her time as police minister. And in her first press conference, she was asked about this nickname, and she said, yes, the opposition do tend to crush the Ardern government at the election. We're not going to let her get away with her poor execution of her policies in New Zealand, basically going the full Trump route on the first day, which is absolutely what all right of centre parties need.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I don't follow New Zealand politics at all, really.
Yeah. Look up Judith Collins and her colourful political career, and you know, you'll be like me. You'll like what you see, and she had a great first day.
I look forward to looking into it.
All right, let's get to the, we've got 15 minutes left. So we'll save the best to last, the mask off, as we call it. Now, I'm going by the Victorian Department of Health and Human Services websites. So the key points here, if you live in an area under statutory restriction, leaving the home for one of the four reasons, you should wear a mask such as a cloth mask or surgical mask if, the key word here is if it is difficult to maintain the 1.5 meters apart from others. Wearing a face mask protects you and your community by providing an additional physical barrier. So it's not 100%, even 99% effective. It's just an additional barrier. Still, you've got to keep your distance and wash your hands. Then it goes on about suitable types of masks, cloth masks and surgical masks. Recommendations to wear a face mask does not apply to children, people aged 18 and under, individuals with breathing difficulties, and those who have physical conditions, such as myself, who have sensitive skin on their face that make it difficult to wear a face mask. There will be no enforcement on the use of face masks. You will not be fined if you do not wear one. And then if we go further down here, are face masks effective for protecting against coronavirus transmission? Face masks have been recommended around the world for their use by the community to reduce transmissions of coronavirus. But, I'm adding the but there, your best protection is to still keep 1.5 meters apart from other people, to wash your hands thoroughly, regularly, cough and sneeze into your elbows. Face masks are helpful. Keyword, they're helpful in containing droplets. When people cough, reduce the likelihood of it spreading the virus for the community. Both cloth masks and surgical masks are effective in reducing the transmission, not eliminating, reducing the transmission there. And obviously, if you're wearing a cloth mask, you have to wash it after you've used it. Otherwise, there's no point, and it has to be properly put on. Otherwise, it's not going to be effective either. So, you respond.
Well, I'd say there's no debate. I mean, we're pretty much in agreement. There's no that we've always known that the masks. Look, the story was initially that masks don't work. You shouldn't get them. Why did they say that, especially in the US? Well, they said that because they were trying to ensure that the essential staff got those. We know that because Dr. Fauci testified before Congress, and that's what he said. That's exactly what he said. And he said, look, later on, that's why we changed our treatment, because we knew that we did have enough. There were millions being made every day by that point, and we were going to be fine. And that's the fact of the matter. That was why there was so much confusion to the start of it. Now, once there wasn't so much confusion about, actually, no, hang on, they actually do kind of work. They help people, for example, to not touch their faces as much, which is really good. Correct me if I'm wrong. And you know, like everything that article pretty much just said is 100% right.
If they're worn properly and you still do all the other things. And as the reason why I went through that advice, the health advice is that maintaining the social distance is actually the most effective thing. And the reason why I wanted to bring this up is because we're seeing a lot of, I would say, pressure on people, and in some cases, I would say downright bullying on people to wear masks. We've seen some of the Karen meltdowns over in the US if someone's not wearing a mask, but we've also seen Karen meltdowns from people from women who are outraged at being told to wear a mask. You have the two separate Karens there, and I noticed that Woolworths, they put out a statement saying that it's optional to wear a mask in your store, but please respect if somebody chooses to wear a mask or they don't choose to wear a mask. And this is where it's become another toxic political partisan thing, that the right seems to be no masks at all, the left seems to be you have to wear masks all the time. And the most absurd thing was, you remember that racist Karen in Central Park, New York? She was walking a dog but wearing a mask, even though there was no one near her.
Yeah. No, look, I mean, that's just, you know, that's just not common sense, I guess. But look, that's the thing, though. This isn't a hill I'm going to die on. I mean, there's definitely wiggle room on this. That's why I don't really feel like there's a debate on this, because it's not even like they're enforcing it. You know, it's not 100% mandatory.
Yeah, and it shouldn't be made mandatory. That's another push to...
Yeah, exactly.
I heard Nicholas Rees, City of Melbourne councillor on Sky News, push mandatory facial masks when people are outside. This is... There hasn't been just the push to level 4, but mandate masks as well, which is what I don't like. And so when I hear you hear somebody like you talk about the benefits of masks, I feel, and I use that word feel because we all know about feelings, I feel that you're adding to this push to make it mandatory indirectly.
No, okay. Well, no, I'm sorry, feel that way, but I actually don't. I've always said that it's better that it's not mandatory, because there's actually it's very hard, you know, people that don't want to wear it at all, it looks very stupid. Their arguments look very stupid when it's not being enforced, if that makes sense, because it's just like, who are you fighting against? It's not being enforced. It's going to be fine. You know, they're not trying to overstretch. Now, I'm not gonna just say that masks don't work, because they do work. In fact, they're most effective when everyone wears them. But the thing is that, you know, there are certain ways that you need to wear them. There's certain ways you can get away with not wearing them, including obviously being in a car wearing a mask. Mm. It's just insanely stupid. But also when you're walking in a park. If you're walking in a park with your family and you're not going to interact, you don't plan on interacting with anyone, if you keep some masks on you, that's fine, but you don't have to wear them.
Mm.
You know, that's just, you know, that's stupid. That doesn't make any sense. In fact, I do recall reading an article in the US of someone who was jogging, healthy guy, and his lungs collapsed.
Yeah,
because he jogged with the mask on. Like I'm aware of the dangers, but in no way do I want to see a mandatory push for masks. But the point must be made, just as that everything you just read out, which I 100% agree on, that yeah, absolutely, social distancing does work. And it is better than wearing a mask. But the fact of the matter is, you know, when you go to your local, you know, I don't know if you have Westmead shopping centres in Victoria, but if you go to a big closed shopping centre, one of the rules I had was that when you're going there, you should probably be wearing a mask. Now, I don't think that should be mandatory, but I think
it's different if it's a private business premises and they make it a condition of entry to wear a mask, because that's the libertarian property rights principle, that if you have a problem with a business mandating conditions of entry mask, you shouldn't really complain about it. Just go somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I'd agree with that. You know, if a business didn't want to let people in because they didn't have a mask on, I'd say, okay, sure, just get a mask. That's it. I mean, it's much of a muchness for me. As I said, this isn't the hill I want to die on. Masks. They do have some benefits.
I'm not holding you solely responsible for the mask mandate push. No.
No. I get that. But look, it is very much a topic where it's just been insane, though, the Karens of this world that have just blown it up. It's like, it doesn't have to be. We can have an intelligent discussion on the merits of masks wearing and when it works, when it doesn't work.
And about
it's just phenomenal.
The science and medicine of it. Because another thing we also need to remind people is there's been a lot of fake news about the virus being airborne, which, according to the Deputy Chief Medical Officer of Australia, Dr. Nick Cosworth, he said it's only proven to be airborne in controlled lab experiments, which of course is not real life. It's still transmitted like the flu is through droplets, through coughing and sneezing. Yeah. And the risk of transmission from surfaces and reusable shopping bags, which is why the supermarkets they haven't gone back in Victoria to the policy of people packing their own bags, because they've also realized that the risk of transmission from a reusable bag is really low, especially when the cashier is handling, like, scanning all of the things. So we have seen some retrospective reflection on that count as well.
Yeah, and I mean it lasts for different lengths of time on different surfaces. I mean, there's some great studies that have come out about how long the virus lasts on, like, you know, a package, cardboard package that's arrived to your house, for example. And you know, look, there's a lot of information out there, and you know, it's just a matter of sifting through it and finding the trustworthy news sources.
Yeah, exactly. So I hope for everyone our exploration of the rules, your rights, the current health advice, and also about the transmission of the coronavirus and masks has helped you as well. I think it's important to cut through the hysteria and bring you the correct information.
Yeah, absolutely.
We were going to, because I know on your Facebook profile, you've been keeping up to date with the latest in cancel culture, because apparently that's still a priority when there's a global pandemic. We are nearly out of time. And have you got any egregious examples that's worth mentioning just in the last few minutes?
Oof. Not that I can think of off the top of my head, but I do know that Barry Weiss, who wrote the original intellectual dark web article in the New York Times, she recently quit, not resigned, she quit, because she actually had a very terrible experience at the New York Times, and she felt that that it was no longer the grey lady, as they call it, the free speech sort of bastion of free speech anymore. So she left now, and with that, because originally they brought her on board after the election of Donald Trump, they wanted to connect more and understand what was going on, what they missed at the New York Times with you being blindsided by the election of Donald Trump. They brought her on, now she's gone. And look, I think that marks the end of the New York Times.
And let's not forget what happened to the editorial director a while back.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, this is not just happening there.
Oh, please tell us our audience in about that.
With which one, sorry?
The editorial director being sacked for publishing an op-ed by a Republican senator.
That was insane. I can't remember 100% of the details on that one, but that was insane. But it's not the only news organization that something similar has happened to. I mean, I mentioned Barry Weiss because she was one of the people one of the 150 intellectuals that signed that Harper's letter that I wrote about in The Spectator this week. And there was another person at Vox who was one of the co-founders at Vox, Matthew Iglesias. And he was absolutely, he got into a bit of almost a flamethrower fight with the other founder at Fox. And it was very interesting to see how the people came after him. And then he ended up saying, look, I'm not going to do anything controversial again on Twitter. We're going to leave that behind me. And he just folded. And that's two organizations that we're looking at already where it's just rank to the core. And it's insane watching what's going on over there, because that'll happen here.
We should also probably give credit to J.K. Rowling for not bowing to the mob. In fact, she keeps doubling down on Twitter, and you just sort of think, wow, mad woman.
Yeah, well, I mean, she picked a good topic to double down on. Initially, it was the trans issue that she said, look, if you're a woman, you're a woman. And, you know, people have been banned. A lot of conservatives have been banned on Twitter because of saying that. I do believe the girl from that Canadian university, Wilfrid Laurier University, it also happened to her where she said something on Twitter and she got temporarily banned on Twitter. Look, this is the story of many conservatives, and it's been somewhat entertaining watching these intellectuals go through the same thing. And yet they watched it happen to conservatives for so many years.
We are right out of time now, so we'll wrap it up there. Thanks for joining me again, Joel. You're not just a good person to bounce off commentary with. You're a world and wisdom of knowledge yourself. And people can, your Facebook account is public. They can read you on The Unshackled or in The Spectator. You're... As someone in your comments observed, you're not exclusive to one platform.
Yeah, could say that. I don't get paid for any of my opinions. If that's also what they want to know, I do write for a number of different organizations and don't get paid for my opinions. Mm.
Well, who could put a value on them?
It'd be hard to quantify.
All right, I'll be back tomorrow night for the Uncuckables on YouTube and DLive, 8:30 p.m. Melbourne time. Trad Tasman Talk on the Unshackled's YouTube channel, 6 p.m. Friday, and then back Wilmsrun again next week on YouTube and DLive, 7 p.m. Melbourne time, Mondays and Wednesdays. So, good night, everybody. Thanks for watching. Stay safe. Not just from the coronavirus, but from tyranny as well.
Thanks for tuning in to Wilmsfront. Visit timwilms.com or Rational Rise TV to view the archive of episodes. And keep visiting theunshackled.net to view all our shows. And to keep up with the latest real news and analysis.